moody, violent, untrustworthy. Adolescents are often stereotyped and maligned in alarming ways. It is strangely acceptable to mock and demonize teenagers. Until recently, stereotypically moody teenage behavior was put down to raging hormones and changes in social life. With the help of advanced brain scanning technologies, for the first time, scientists have been able to study how the physiological mechanisms that develop in the adolescent years underpin our sense of who we are, our sense of self. Sarah Jane Blakemore, the leading authority on adolescent cognitive neuroscience, has dedicated years of research to the development of the teenage brain. Her new book is Inventing Ourselves, The Secret Life of the Teenage Brain, and she shows how typical teenage behavior isn't mindless and destructive. It happens for a reason. Sarah Jane Blakemore is a Royal Science University Research Fellow and a professor in cognitive neuroscience at University College London, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Hi.
Very nice to have you on the program. Give us a sense of what brought you of wanting to look at the life of a teenage brain.
Well, I became interested in the teenage brain because I was doing some research on mental illness, and I learned that most mental illnesses like depression and anxiety and eating disorders and even schizophrenia first start during adolescence, which is what led me initially to decide to study the development of the teenage brain to find out what's going on.
When you realize, I guess I find it interesting that mental illness will somehow bring you in the same quarters of a teenage brain.
Yes, but what we know for sure is that 3/4 of all mental illnesses start in adolescence. So there's something about the period of life of adolescence that makes the brain particularly vulnerable to developing mental health problems.
As we mentioned, you are a Royal Society University Research Fellow and a professor in cognitive neuroscience at University College London. So when it comes to your research, and my understanding is that we're getting to know a lot more about the brain overall, but when it comes to the teenage brain, great strides there as well, I assume.
Yeah, so 20 years ago, we knew almost nothing about how the human brain develops during the teenage years. In fact, the dogma back then was that it didn't develop at all after childhood. That's what I was taught when I was doing my undergraduate degree. But in the last 15 or 20 years, many different studies around the world have scanned the living human brain during childhood and throughout adolescence and shown that, contrary to what I was taught 20 years ago, the brain, in fact, continues to develop right throughout childhood, throughout the teenage years and into the 20s. And it undergoes really substantial, big, protracted changes.
We so often hear about social pressures and, of course, hormones that have a lot to do with the way that adolescents behave. You write about it in the book, though, and say that this is actually the development of the brain.
Yeah, so again, 20 years ago, those kinds of stereotypical teenage behaviors that we associate adolescents with, like risk-taking and impulsivity and self-consciousness and being influenced by their friends, they were all put down to hormones, increases in sex hormones at puberty, and also social changes like moving schools from going from small schools to big secondary schools and middle schools. And that's just because we didn't know back then anything about how the brain develops. But we now know that in addition to those hormonal changes and social changes, the brain is undergoing large amounts of development in brain regions that are involved in things like decision-making and planning and risk-taking and self-awareness and social understanding. So that adds a part of the jigsaw puzzle in understanding teenage typical behavior.
So when it comes to your political beliefs or your moral beliefs or who you like to listen to on the radio, this is when that gets fully developed.
Well, it's when those kinds of things start to become really important. Because if you think about what is adolescence for, you know, think back about your own teenage years. This is when your sense of kind of who you are, your self-identity, and particularly how other people see you, takes on a step change in importance. It suddenly becomes really important to define yourself to other people. So that's why we become much more interested in our what fashion we wear, our music taste, what peer group we're hanging out with, and, as you said, things like our moral beliefs and our political beliefs take on a sudden increase in importance during the teenage years, because that's what defines us to other people.
You noted this a moment ago, but the insight that we now have into the changes of the brain, and because this is a turbulent period, it gives an understanding of why so many mental illnesses, whether it be addiction or schizophrenia or depression, start in adolescence. So what do we know about the development that makes that possible?
So as I said, that's how I became interested in the teenage brain. But in fact, I've spent the last 16 or 17 years studying the typically developing teenage brain. And I myself haven't even got round to looking at brain development in teenagers who develop mental health problems. However, a lot of scientists are interested in that question. And there are hints at answers. So there is a various different studies that show that the brain develops differently in young people who develop mental health problems. So it's not about the kind of end point of what the brain looks like once they're an adult. It's about how it gets there. And how it gets there seems to be really important in determining whether it gets there in a healthy way or in a mentally ill way.
And what can we tell from a child's brain to an adolescent brain? Is meaning, do we see the seeds there that then they develop into, whether it's mental illness or not, but that there are seeds, obviously, that come in from birth?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, there are genetic components to mental health problems, like where you can be born with a genetic predisposition, so a genetic risk for developing a mental illness. But the environment is also important, and I mean, there are many, many different environmental risk factors for developing, say, schizophrenia. For example, maltreatment in childhood or abuse in childhood, but also things like living in big cities, smoking cannabis, stressful life events. They can all come together to interact with genetics and to increase the risk of developing mental health problems like schizophrenia in people who already have a genetic predisposition.
You write in the book about understanding the development of the social brain during this time, during adolescence, has real implications for legal and education policy, and of course for parents, of the giving us an idea of what the best time is to do various things and teach various things in an adolescent's life.
Yes, this is a very young field of science, so there aren't too many conclusions that we can draw yet for the classroom, but we can certainly conclude that it's really useful. A lot of teachers and parents and even teenagers themselves find it useful to understand more about how the brain changes in adolescence and to understand why certain behaviors are often seen in adolescence, like risk-taking and impulsivity and those kinds of behaviors. So I think you know, my main kind of general point would be that it's empowering for young people and the people who teach them and look after them to understand more about teen brain development. And then there are a few specific findings from neuroscience that I think probably do have quite strong implications for education, like, for example, the finding that in adolescence, the brain's circadian rhythm, so the body clock, shifts by about 2 hours, so that teenagers are no longer ready to go to sleep in the evening, early in the evening, and they're also not ready to get up in the morning. And that's not because they're lazy, which I think is, you know, a kind of stereotype of teenagers, but it's because, for biological reasons, the sleep-inducing hormone melatonin is produced a couple of hours later during the teenage years than it is in childhood or adulthood. So that obviously has implications for what time children are expected to go to school in the morning.
One of the things that I learned in your book, the brain, and tell me if I'm right on this, if I understand this correctly, is that the brain continues to develop into our 20s or 30s, which was much later than was originally thought.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, most people thought that the brain stops developing in childhood, but we now know it stops. It continues to develop right throughout adolescence and into the 20s and even the 30s. So the development of the brain goes on for much longer than most neuroscientists ever believed.
And what does that, I mean, we've been talking and focusing obviously on the adolescent nature of this, but what does that mean for someone in their 20s and 30s?
Well, I mean, there is an argument made recently in the medical journals that adolescents should be considered to go up to about 24 years old. So that's one possibility, that we kind of reconsider the whole definition of adolescence. So it's not just the teenage years, but it goes on longer than that. And that's partly based on the new brain science, showing that the brain continues to change right into the 20s. I think what it means, I mean, it's hard to know really, but I think it probably means that the ability to learn and the sum of evidence for creativity is heightened right into the 20s, like throughout childhood, as we all knew, and in the teenage years and in the 20s compared with later on.
When it comes to your research and your science, as you say, some of these are relatively young fields. What are the big question marks that are still out there that you would like to answer?
Oh, there are so many. Okay, I'll just give you a couple of examples.
Sure.
I'm interested in individual differences. So, of course, there's no such thing really as an average teenager. All teenagers are different, just like all adults are different. And understanding more about individual differences in brain development, I think, is the next big question. Like, you know, how does the brain develop in different cultures or in different socioeconomic groups, or if you have different levels of nutrition or in different education environments or with different, I don't know, if you smoke cannabis or drink alcohol, all those environmental influences, how do they affect the way the brain develops during adolescence, I think is a really important question. Another question, of course, which is related, is how does technology and screen time affect the developing brain? Because there's a lot of worry that it's having a negative effect on the developing brain of teenagers, but we don't actually know yet because the science hasn't been done. It is starting to be done, but there are no answers yet. One thing about screen time is that whether or not it affects the brain in negative or positive ways, I think it certainly has an effect on sleep. If young people, as a lot of young people I work with tend to do, they tend to have their cell phones on all night and responding to messages in the middle of the night, which is waking them up, and that clearly can't be good for sleep. And we all know that sleep is so important for mood and mental health and well-being.
Well, the name of the book is Inventing Ourselves, The Secret Life of the Teenage Brain. It is published by Public Affairs. Sarah Jane Blakemore, I thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks so much.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, Inventing Ourselves, The Secret Life of the Teenage Brain by Sarah Jane Blakemore. It is published by Public Affairs. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.